Good evening and welcome to Thursday Night Talk, The Race Beat, a place for in-depth discussions about race, culture, and identity. Through these conversations and understanding, we will discover our differences really aren't so different. Tonight, our discussion will focus on Humboldt State University's cultural centers. They're becoming commonplace on predominantly white campuses, college campuses. During the next hour, we will explore the necessity for such centers, the roles of each center, and how the community at large can support their endeavors. My guest tonight, over the telephone, a multicultural center coordinator Carlos Sanchez, Latinx Center for Academic Excellence coordinator Fernando Paz, and student community liaison with that group Victoria Nazario, Native American Center for Academic Excellence coordinator, or ITEP, Adrian Colgrove Raymond, and the Asian Desi Pacific Islander Collective Club advisor, Roger Wang. And not represented here tonight, but just to acknowledge the African American Center for Academic Excellence coordinator, Kenya James. So I will start with Carlos Sanchez over the phone. Carlos, well, first, welcome to you all, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us, Lona.
So, Carlos, you are the new interim coordinator for the Multicultural Center. Explain the significance of that that department on the campus of HSU and what some of the features or functions of that organization.
Okay, beautiful. So the Multicultural Center is, I'm going to read an excerpt from the purpose statement when it was initiated back in 1994. So it took off in 1993. So, I think it still aligns to what we are doing currently. So the center is a student-initiated program dedicated to an educational process in which students from diverse cultural heritage share their experiences with members of the HSU community to improve understanding of differences and commonalities. It is intended to benefit and strengthen the potential to live in harmony in the increasing cultural diverse communities, and then in this case of the 1990s and beyond. And I think it's just that. It's a student led center, and we just provide and empower the students to basically navigate the system here at HSU, because the majority of the students are imported from out of the area, and also empower them so they can succeed in classes, and also do a little bit of leadership and advocacy for things that they see that there is a need here at HSU.
So what are some of the functions or programs that come out of the Multicultural Center?
Beautiful. So right now, we know that there's groups that are underrepresented. The Multicultural Center right now has two main receptions. One of them is the queer receptions for the LGBTQA students. And then the other one is the Asian Desi Pacific Islander reception, which we help the ATEC Collective, which Roger, I think, is going to mention or touch a little bit on that. So those are the two main receptions that we have, and then also we do campus community dialogue on race in the fall and social justice summit in the spring.
So is the, I think there's a women's center. Is that part of the multicultural center as well?
Yes, good thing you reminded me. So the multicultural center houses two other centers in the building. One of them is just newly opened this spring, Scholars Without Borders. And the other one is the Women's Resource Centers. And so there are centers who are open to any student. Scholars Without Borders was open to help students who are undocumented navigate the system because their resources are limited. And the Women's Resource is the same. So they needed a place, and they found a place here at the MCC, and their funds are very limited.
How many students are employed at the Multicultural Center?
So the Multicultural Center has 15 student staff, and that's not including the Scholars Without Borders or the Women's Resource Centers. Those are independent from the Multicultural Center.
And how many students do you serve annually?
Oh, good Lord. That's a good question. I think I want to say close to at least 200 more on the 500 side. But as I said, with the receptions and all the events that we do, I mean, I think we're pretty much up there with, I think, thousands, because it's here and there that the students go to the events.
Okay.
But I could be overestimating, but I mean, it's a big population, I think.
Okay, now I'm going to move over to Adrian. You briefly discussed before the show began how the cultural centers came to be. So why don't we talk about how the Centers for Academic Excellence were created?
Certainly. Back in 2012, there was a work group that was established on campus. It was looking at, it was housing, EOP, INTERCEP, ITEP, some of the other support programs, the Latino Mentor Program, and it was the different directors coming together and looking at the models of serving students and academically. And we discovered through that process of comparing notes and sharing activities that, and looking at the students that we were serving, that the students that were under the guise of these different programs were actually doing quite well. The retention was quite high, they were doing strong academically, and they seemed to be retaining them at greater levels than the campus at large. So with that working group, we also looked at the students that of color in particular that weren't in those programs, that weren't associated with those programs. And we discovered that there was actually, that was a group of students that were actually doing quite poorly. We were losing them at greater rates of retention was horrible, horrific. Their academic success was not as well. And certainly we could see that they weren't being engaged on campus. So later on, this group moved on in 2013 to become a retention and student success reorganization working group. And this group took entities from across the campus, including some of the deans, the different faculty, and then also the support programs. And we started looking at the models, comparing, looking at different models across the country and throughout the state, different cultural centers and such. And with this recommendation, we discovered that we really wanted to focus on academics. And although we wanted to make things culturally relevant and specific for the centers and to have what we call different nutrients within each center and to allow there to be diversity within each center, we wanted to also make sure that they were also really steered towards looking at the academic success of students and following the models of INTERCEP, ITEP, and EOP in particular.
For the record, what do INTERCEP and ITEP stand for?
Sure. So ITEP is the Indian Tribal and Education Personnel Program. It was in existence since 1969. Started as a teacher education prep program for Native students here on campus, and then later developed into a Native support program, which is ITEP. Still remain will be celebrating our 50th year in 2019. INTERCEP was the Indian Natural Resource Science and Engineering Program, which stemmed after another program that existed shortly after ITEP in support of Native students who were studying in the science.
Okay. And some naysayers may wonder, I won't say naysayers, some people in the community may question, why is there a necessity for cultural centers, and why isn't there a white center represented here? Would anyone like to respond to that before we get further involved in this conversation?
I'd like to respond and then give Victoria a chance to chime in, because part of, so the history of universities as a whole have been very spaces of elite spaces for white, predominantly male people of privilege. And then in the 1960s, there was a rupture where more diverse voices were heard in higher education. So ITEP has its roots in that civil rights movement. And even though there have been advances in higher education, there's still a dominant narrative around students of color, where students of color are narrated as being pathologically in need, intellectually inferior, and academically inept. So it narrates a student of color as being deficient in all ways, shapes, and forms. And because of that, we need to lift them up. So the centers, on one hand, disrupt that narrative by constructing a counter-narrative where we acknowledge and recognize the resilience in our community, the fact that we come from an ancient intellectual tradition, each one of us from our different cultures and civilizations, that the universities, as we think about them, also existed. Like for me, in the Mesoamerican civilization, the Calpulli was a center of learning and knowledge production. So recognizing that we come with this brilliance, with genius, with a wisdom that is not part of the dominant, but that there can be a space to nurture that flame and that passion and that knowledge within students that is not part of an oppressive system, that is part of something that's theirs, that's ours.
Right. So with Humboldt State University being a Hispanic-serving institution, or categorized as a Hispanic-serving institution with the largest population body on campus, some may believe that there is a need for a white center, or they may be the underrepresented group. What would you say to that?
What do you think? Go ahead.
And Victoria, you're a student. What is your exact title once again?
I am the Intercultural Intersection Specialist at the Latinx Center.
Okay.
So something that I'd like to add, when I know my experience is not the same as everyone else's, but coming to the center my first year, going to study and going to learn with the other students, like with the same, that have the same culture, or, you know, it was really empowering for me seeing people of color just studying and, you know, going places. And I feel, it makes me feel that a lot of times we're misrepresented. You know, I have family and I'm first generation. So coming here and seeing the students in the center just working hard, you know, it is an empowering feeling for me.
Yep, because everywhere else is white studies. Everywhere else is for white people. And then folks can come to our center like Victoria, and that's our community, right? People that look like us. And we've had this critique of folks feeling uncomfortable, white people coming into our center. And what we say is, like, how do you think we feel going into a class predominantly white folks? So,
yeah, I actually had an incident where I have friends that, you know, they feel uncomfortable coming into our center, and I actually had a conversation with our staff, and I was like, how can we make them feel comfortable? How can we make it inviting for everyone to come in? Because, you know, I feel terrible, but at the same time, I adjusted to it without realizing that I was adjusting to it. So I'm glad I had that conversation with my staff, because it's not something that I could do, but it's something that, you know, it's a natural thing that's gonna happen.
So these centers aren't necessarily exclusionary then. Anyone is welcome to participate or visit the centers?
Yeah, absolutely.
So one thing, I don't know if you mentioned this, Adrian. When did the centers open officially?
In 2014.
Okay, I think you did say that.
Yeah, so they're relatively new.
Okay.
And they are also severely understaffed, and we understand that the new centers in particular, and then the older centers, have actually lost some staff over the years and some resources as well. In fact, I think the budget of ITEP is the same as it was in 2003, you know, or less. We actually make less than, we have a operating budget less than 2003. So I have to say, you know, having observed the opening of the new centers, in particular the Latinx and the African American Center for Academic Excellence as well, they have done a tremendous job with the students have really jumped in and they have put their whole heart and soul into these programs and they have developed an incredible program, even though they don't necessarily have the advisors. Like ITEP is really solely set on educational planning and developing. We have a library where students can come in and get culturally relevant curriculum and books that will help them with their studies and such. And so we're you know, 50 years ahead of these centers. So, but I do have to say and give have great respect for those who have jumped in and really have taken off. The centers are doing a fantastic job.
If you're just tuning in, this is Thursday Night Talk, The Race Beat. I'm your host, Lorna Bryant, and we're discussing Humboldt State University's cultural centers. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can do so by calling locally, 826-4805. You can use our toll-free number, 800-640-5911. Or you can text if you don't want to use your voice on the air. And that number is 707-492-KHSU. Again, that's 492-5478. So, Roger, I didn't hear Asian Pacific Islander DESE Cultural Center for Academic Excellence. I introduced you as the club advisor. So why is there not a center?
You know, that's a very good question. So in the 2014 ODI report, they mentioned, you know, the creation of an Asian DESE Pacific Islander Center. It was never created. You know, that is a lot of different theories. I can, you know, I'll share my own theories on that. But, you know, we are a club right now. So we meet just once an hour for once a week. And we're based out of the MCC. We have a couple of coordinators that are actually paid through the MCC. So thank you, Carlos, who work with our club. And so the club is very similar to these centers. You know, we provide a safe space for Asian DESE Pacific Islander students. You know, we celebrate cultural, we develop student leadership, we, you know, just kind of advocate for ADPI student needs. And one of the goals is actually to create a center. And so they are advocating for themselves that they want a space. You know, we are 1 hour in a single week. And so there's a lot of students who can't come to the meetings, who just aren't able to kind of reach out to and kind of get those resources and find community. You know, some of the reasons why I think there is no centers. I think there's a general misrepresentation of Asian DESE Pacific Islander students and people in general in our country, that, you know, we're model minorities, that and that we don't need support. And so, you know, if we look at some of the retention graduation data as well, you can kind of see that the ADPI students actually do pretty well. They actually do better in terms of graduation and retention rates than white students and other students. But it's actually much more complicated than that. You know, Asian DESE Pacific Islanders represents a lot of different countries, a lot of different people, and they all have different educational attainment achievement. And so there's a lot of... when you generalize a whole entire population and you have one statistic and makes it look great, you actually miss out on a lot. So you have to really disaggregate the data and get to it, which is not something that we do. So it's much more complicated question. But that is, I think, one of the reasons why we don't have a ADPI center and funding and all that kind of stuff.
So can you define DESE and what that means?
Yeah.
And who is represented by the term DESE?
Mm-hmm. So DESE is a term for people from the Indian subcontinent, usually people from Bangladesh, India, and Pakistan. I think the translation is the people from the country, Desh. I have to check. It's not a term that I, but it's a term that those people usually generally refer themselves to.
And while we're on that path, Fernando, explain why it's not Latino Center or Latina Center and Latinx Center instead.
Yeah. So Right. That's a great question. Right now, the name of the center is the Latinx Center for Academic Excellence. We are in the process of transition. Latinx is, X is to make it non-gender binary, because Latino is male, Latina is female. But we are transitioning our name to El Centro Académico Cultural, specifically because there's been such a rich discourse around identity. In the 1960s, during the civil rights movement, people fought to be called Chicano instead of wetback, because wetback was what we were all called. Mm-hmm. Actually, the movement was to be called illegal alien. People wanted to be called illegal alien. Nowadays, that's something we don't look towards. But it acknowledges, one, that history, that we went from wetback to illegal alien to Chicano to Mexican American to Hispanic, Latino, Latinoa, Latinx, and even there are some people who really emphasize the indigenous part of our heritage and call themselves Nincantlaca. Nincantlaca is a recognition that we are indigenous to this continent. So instead of us asserting one identity over another, we're changing our name to embrace the discourse and the dialogue, because each one of us can decide for themselves how they want to be identified. I, for example, identify as Chicano, and Victoria and other staff will have different opinions around that. So, but we all share a cultural and historical trajectory, and that's what we acknowledge.
So is there a movement to redefine the African American Center? Because it pretty much compartmentalizes people of African descent. You might have Africans. Actually, there is an African intern employee of at the African American Center. How is he represented in that title, in that group?
That's a great question, and I don't feel like I can answer or speak for it. All I know is that they're also going through a process of changing the name, and one of the ideas that was thrown out there was that it would be the Sankofa Center. And for our center, one of the reasons we struggle so much with the term Latino or Latinx is because the root of that word is Latin, which is a reference to Southern European, which is white, and where's the indigenous in that? Mm. Right, so it's a very much a racialized term, and it's an investment in white supremacy, because it is something that we become when we come to this nation. In our homelands, we weren't Latinos, just like the Irish when they came to the United States became white, and the Germans and the Italians. We see that there is a process of whitening that is happening with our indigenous, with our immigrant community. So it's one of the reasons why we invite the conversation. I don't know exactly what is the conversation that's happening with the African American Center. I know that last semester there was a vote within the center to change the name, and that they're moving that effort forward.
So just to define, and I am Googling this, I do understand the significance of the term Sankofa, but for the sake of eloquence on the show tonight, I am referring to the Wikipedia definition because it was the first thing that came up when I Googled. It's a word in the Twi language of Ghana that translates as go back and get it, to fetch, to seek, and to take. And it also refers to the Asante Adinkra symbol, represented either with a stylized heart shape or by a bird with its head turned around backwards, carrying a precious egg in its mouth. Sankofa is often associated with the proverb, see wo were fi na wo sankofa yinki, which translates, it is not wrong to go back for that which you have forgotten. So beautiful. And I can't help but think about the chant that played over and over in the movie Get Out. There was a Swahili chant that kind of refers to go back and run. So it's the significance of that word is definitely important, and it represents many African cultures or African groups within the diaspora. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful thing. I hope it does get changed to be more inclusive. So, Victoria, why don't you tell me some of the things that you do at the center in your position?
Yeah. So I currently host an event called Café con Chisme. Café con Chisme is a social event. Chisme is usually portrayed bad. Chisme is like, oh, like, you know, tell me what's going on. Like, give me the chisme. So, you know, a lot of people think that chisme is a bad thing, but it's actually a form of self-care. And in our case, we use it as a practice for self-care. So the event is every other Fridays from 2 to 4. And it's basically a place for students to come talk about, you know, community issues or, you know, personal issues that are going on, and or just, you know, getting to know some of the cool things that are happening in town. It's really a place that, for me personally, I want everyone to feel safe and comfortable to just talk to each other. My freshman year coming to Humboldt State, I didn't have anyone to talk to, and going to the center, I would see the students and the staff in particular, and I felt so comfortable and I felt safe to talk to them about family or about issues that I feel that are going on in the community. And that's just my main priority, is to help students that may be feeling that way right now.
So I've heard you say safe space. I've heard Roger say safe space. What exactly do you mean by that?
I'm not sure if I can define that. It's just something you feel. Like I said, my freshman year, I came, and honestly, going to class, for me, it was predominantly white, and I didn't realize the people of color. And going to the center, I would smell, like, you know, the cafe, the pan dulce, like, the colors, the setup, like, it just reminds me of my grandma, it reminds me of my home. So that, to me, home is my safe place, and seeing the culture, seeing the Latinx Center, El Centro, having those things makes me feel comfortable and makes me feel safe.
Mm-hmm. So does the same thing apply in ITEP, Adrian, or in Intercept as well, I mm-hmm. guess?
Certainly, that's certainly a draw for our students, you know, because it's a place where their cultural value systems are listened to, heard, and validated. And also for our students in particular, I think what all of the advisors in our center, what we would say is that our students are here and they are on a mission and they have a focus, and they need to get from this campus what is culturally relevant to take back into the Native communities. Mm-hmm. Many of our students are going to go back to the 110 tribes within the state of California. They're going to go back to their tribal entities, their tribes and Indian country and across the nation. And they're going to work and they're going to need to know our issues. They need to know what works. They're going to have to understand sovereignty, the government-to-government relationships. Mm-hmm. And so their arena is very different. And so when they come to the campus, it's not always validated in the classroom. It's not validated in the advising system. It's not validated in anything here on this campus because people don't understand it. Not that they want to, but they don't necessarily understand how the system works. And so whereas in our house, we can help with that mentoring, help build their bridges with tribal entities in the community, throughout the state, throughout the nation, and it builds some relevance into why they're here. And that makes their learning experience much more rich. And in addition, we allow them to bring their cultural wealth with them. And when they bring their cultural wealth and their spirituality and their value systems with them, and we validate that, then they take it into the classroom and they become a better student. They become more influential for other students in the classroom and the faculty. And then they also are gathering more specific information that they need to take back into their community. And so if that's a safe space, then that's what it is for us, because it means that we are helping them draw the tools that they need to take back into their community and validating their cultural wealth.
So is it separatist to have these spaces, or is it just being an other in this predominantly white community that it gives you a sense to kind of be yourself and not play another role? I mean, and we all, I'm an African-American woman. I have my 9-to-5 voice, and I have my 5-to-9 voice. And, you know, I do have to code switch, and I'm sure we all do a little bit of code switching. So is it separatist, or is it a place where you can just kind of be yourself?
I'd like to address that, Lorna. When we first started the centers, you know, everyone, including students of color, were concerned that we were segregating students, and was that helpful, or was that, you know, help? And the way I like to look at it, and I've used this analogy several times, and it resonates well with people, and that's the idea of a garden. You know, when you plant a garden, there's some plants in there that really need a lot of sun, and there's some plants that need shade. There's some plants that need a lot of water. There's some that need less water. Some need acidic soil. Some need everything needs different nutrients. And when you plant a garden, if you just do one type of nutrient, then some things will thrive and other things will die. And that's what we do on a college campus. We go, here's the nutrient. And there's some students are just thriving. And the rest of us are like, why are we here? We're wilting away. But when you provide little sectors of nutrients, different types of nutrients to feed the soul of these students and to feed their minds and to provide the campus with a diverse variety of value systems and cultural systems. And when you provide that, then everyone can thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can I add on to that?
Sure.
Because we've had this conversation and it really resonates with me. What Adrian just, because the metaphor I use is like there is a dignity in the difference that we bring to the center. There is also a solidarity, but that solidarity can only happen when we understand the richness of our diversity. And I use the metaphor of a music scale so that there can be notes that can be hit on different different places on the scale, and they can harmonize. So we look for that harmony, right? So that this garden, because of beautiful, a beautiful like symphony of sounds, right? You can't have a symphony unless you have different instruments playing different sounds. And through our difference, we make this beautiful harmony together, right?
I love both analogies. I'm visualizing it. Now, Roger, I'm from Los Angeles. Went to a very diverse high school. And I think to like UCLA, there's a pretty significant Asian Pacific Islander Desi population there, mm-hmm. and not a significant population here. So does that make the significance of this group even more important?
Yeah, so ADPI students here on campus represent about 300 students, so about 3% of our student population. It actually gets a little bit more complicated from there.
Total,
yeah, so 300 students. It actually gets a little bit more complicated, though, just based on how our applications work and how our census works and everything. So when you fill out your CSU application, you list Hispanic, but you're also identify as Asian, you just get counted as Hispanic, and so you're no longer counting that 300 number. Same thing as if you list two or more races. So if you're Asian and white, you know, your parents are mixed. Even though you might identify as Asian, you might look as like Asian, you're still not counted as Asian. And so that's a little bit, so that actual number, so if somebody lists Asian anywhere in the application, that number actually skyrockets to about 700 students. But we only look at the 300 number. And so that percentage does go up higher. And there is a history here in Humboldt County of Asian exclusion, Chinese exclusion. And let me look up some quick stuff. So in 1885, we actually had a Chinatown in Eureka that was there. And it was in a decrepit state because of that's how Chinatowns were created. You know, they were pushed into bad blocks, and they didn't have proper sewage and all this kind of stuff. And there was an incident in 1885. Eureka expelled all Chinese from Humboldt County and from Eureka. Wow. There's a second expulsion in 1906 when a couple of Chinese tried to come up here because a business wanted to help them in the cannery. And then within like a month, they were kicked out. Mm-hmm. And the first Asians to come back were about 1950s. That was the just change in federal laws and immigration and all that kind of stuff. And that was the first time Asians have actually come back is 1950s. And so there's a history of Asian exclusion here in Humboldt County that isn't recognized and talked about too often in Humboldt County history. It is known to some, but not by many.
Right. And I would be remiss if we didn't mention Indian Island Massacre and different massacres that have occurred systematically in this region with Native Americans here. Would you like to speak on that anymore, Adrian?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, in this area, we've had a real attack on our land, our culture, and I think right here in where the campus is located, in particular with the Wiat tribe and what has happened to them, and even locally, I mean, recently, when we think in terms of them trying to get Indian Island back, and when the city offers to give the island back, and then we have, you know, people here, businessmen and people who are against that, you know, so even it extends even today. There's some committees locally where they don't want the tribes to be involved in these committees or to have a say or a voice, you know, so it's an ongoing struggle. I mean, the history is there, but and we talk about the history, but it continues. And our students are product of that, all of that oppressiveness today. And we're also trying to work our students through that process, too. Why does it still go on? You know, like many of our grandparents, my grandparents were in boarding schools taken from the local area down to Southern California. And we've had a lot of oppressive behaviors against our people, but it continues. And even locally, even for Native people. And even though we have the two largest tribes in California here, we have a large Native population, we have the highest Native American population of students on the campus, you know, of all the CSUs, but we still have all of this to work through, and I guess that's when I see our students, we really need to have strong mentors to help them work through this process.
Right. So that kind of speaks to the significance of safe space even more. Some of the things that you're describing, especially considering, you know, we are right now on Wiat land, so that's pretty significant. So I recently read an article from a website. The title of the article is Jesuit Institutions and Students of Color, Four Ideas to Keep Moving Forward. And the article was written by Michaela Berry, a senior at Fordham University. She's double majoring in playwriting and African American studies. And this article was published on September 12th, 2017. And she outlines these 4 points, four cultural centers that you see on university campuses across the country. And the first is to clearly identify supportive faculty and staff members. How important is that to each of you here?
Critical.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Well,
is that like so obvious that?
Well, because going back to the point, Adrian, I mean, the origins of our centers, one thing I keep repeating over and over again is that we will not be a brown face in the right place. We will not, and for us, the metaphor I use is pan dulce, sweet bread, meaning that we will not be tokenized. And in order for us to be substantial and to have substance for the students, for faculty, and for staff, is for us to have those relationships. The vision of the centers being oriented around academics requires that we have an intimate relationship with faculty, especially faculty that share our historical cultural trajectory. However they express it now, you know, it varies politically, ideologically, and that's okay to a certain extent. But it's critically important so that we don't become just an artifact on HSU's cultural boutique.
Well, I'm going to refer to you now, Victoria. How frequently do you see faculty and staff who look like you and identify in the same way you identify?
Not frequently at all. Yeah.
Any instances?
You know what? This semester actually was the first time. And you know, it's kind of funny actually. When she started the class, she mentioned that because she speaks Spanish in her class sometimes as well, and she mentioned that, like, you know, like, I'm sorry if it makes you feel uncomfortable, but this is me. And this is, you know, who I am. She's actually told me about cases where she told the class about cases where students would go up to her and tell her, like, I feel really uncomfortable with this, and please don't talk like that to me. And yeah, so
did it remind you of your abuela at home, and did you smile and get a warm fuzzy feeling when you experienced that, though?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to see that, especially since it's my third year now, and it's my first time seeing that. I also forgot to mention, this is my first year working on staff, working at the center, and this is my first year meeting so many people of color. And let me tell you, it's been awesome. I'm meeting such awesome personalities, and it's just been super great. Like I said, it's really empowering for me, and I see all of us doing really great things.
I can see and hear the smile on your face when you say that.
Yeah.
So the second thing that the author suggests is to, incidentally, there's a footnote to that. Information of those who are willing to work with students should be readily accessible. That's important. I think I'll pass this on to the powers of that be here on campus. This is something to work with in the future. The second is to ensure that there is someone actively charged with promoting diversity and inclusion within both the campus staff and the student body. I think that's currently going on here on campus. We have a new executive director of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Dr. Cheryl Johnson, and she's already making a pretty significant mark, not only within the campus community, but also with the campus the community at large. She's working with the city of Arcata, business leaders, and working to make this a more diverse and equitable place for all of us here in our community. So I think that's being we're seeing changes there. The third is student liaisons provide an open line of communication between student leaders and all levels of administration. Do you see that, Victoria? Can you call up the president if you want to chat with her?
Yes and no. I've actually had this conversation with Fernando, and I think that it's not as easy. And, you know, a lot of times I'll talk to, you know, professors or higher, and they'll tell me, like, it's on you. You're supposed to do that. Like, you're supposed to be able to, like, reach out. But at the same time, I don't think it's my fault, because I think it should be easy access. You know, like, it should be accessible for me to have these resources available. And,
I think now the author of this was from Fordham University, a very large institution. We're relatively small, so if we don't run into our professor in class, we may run into them at Wildberries. So we do. There is some bit of accessibility. I don't know if willingness to interact is the same, though.
And to speak to Victoria's point, is, you know, I hear this often on campus, you know, as if, well, if the students really care, then they should act toward it and everything. Mm-hmm. And then it puts the work on the students. You know, their job is to get a degree, not to, you know, not necessarily to better the institution as a whole. At some point, the administration and all of us as staff and faculty need to follow through on our end. You know, it's not up to the students to do everything. You know, the students, you know, the students I work with, they do advocate on their behalf. They've met with some of the VPs, but there's still no center. There's still no follow through on that. And so it's important to not just listen, but to follow through on your words and not just have those words fall on deaf ears.
The fourth and final suggestion is a physical space designated for students of color on campus. There have been several moments where I have felt alienated on my own campus and craved a space where I could go to feel safe, comforted, and heard. Those are the words of Michaela Berry, the author of that. And that's what these centers are actually doing. They are giving safe space where they students can feel safe, comforted, and heard. So it's doing its job. So since these centers have, since their inception, the retention rates have increased. There's more engagement with students, with other students. And I guess that's a positive thing, wouldn't you say? Anyone?
Yeah. Yes.
You can't hear nods on the radio, guys. So we are coming to the end of the program, and still there's time to call in if you have a question, comment, concern. And the numbers are 707-826-4805. The toll-free number is 800-640-5911. If you don't want to have your voice on the radio, you can text us at 707-492-5478. So, Adrian, you mentioned that there are areas that are lacking in the centers. They're understaffed. Mm. I'm guessing there may be budget issues. How can the community at large assist these centers without, and at the same time respect the safe space of these centers? Can that be done?
Yeah. Well, excuse me. Especially important, I think, is any type of community assistance is always helpful. Like, for example, jobs for students. You know, that sometimes there's off-campus jobs. Looking at potentially donations. There's a place to donate to the centers if a person wants to personally donate. They could donate to the centers. In particular, our graduation ceremonies. That's usually where we have a huge deficit in the end of the year. We're always trying to pay, you know, the dining and everything with every last bit of funds that we have at the end of the year. But that's always something that if the community wants to help donate to that cause, we always look for alumni who are interested in saying, where could I put some funds, you know, to the university? When you donate to the university, you can specifically say you would like to donate to these centers, to ITEP, to Intercept, to any of the cultural centers. I think those are places where the community could actually develop, you know, a funding and resources for that, for sure. Also, in regards to the campus community, I think the more that faculty work with us and the more that different departments work with us and help to collaborate and partner, we tend to share funds together and we can help solidify, you know, some of the resources that we need to get some of the key events and activities going for our centers. And then certainly there's always, you know, advocating when we're in plan, any of us who are in position, we're in our planning committees or any kind of committees on campus to really look at the models of the centers, to take them serious in regards to being academic support programs for our students. Not that they're just cultural centers where there's dancing and food, you know, because sometimes that's the connotation, but rather that they are strong academic support centers and however we can entwine them, you know, in our writings and grants and in the way that we articulate our reports and proposals to the administration. I think that's all very helpful. Sometimes we get isolated. We get busy in our own little islands trying to take care of things, and sometimes we're not included and at the table when we can help, you know, with some of the planning. For example, when we're looking at the graduation initiative, or when we're looking at some of the mandates from the chancellor's office, I think we can be very instrumental and utilize more to help with those different, you know, proposals that they're sending forth. And I think we just sometimes are not considered until afterwards, you know, after they've already been planned and proposed. Whereas if we could be included earlier on in that process, I think we could be more of an asset.
So you said something in the very beginning of your comment, our graduations. So we have a commencement that takes place at the end of the year, on a Saturday morning through the afternoon in Redwood Bowl. But there are specific graduations for the centers. There have been critiques and ridicule by people in the community nationwide saying these separate graduations are forced segregation and it should not be allowed. Would anyone like to speak about that? I'm looking at your... Well, you know, I'm going to say something. My best friend graduated from Cal State Northridge in 1990 or 1991, and I went to her black graduation. And it was the most beautiful thing I had ever experienced. I myself experienced Black Grad in 2010 and then regular commencement the following day. I actually had the privilege of being the keynote speaker at Black Grad. And I started by saying, you know, there's going to be a big day with all of your classmates, your cohort, et cetera, on Saturday. But this will be the most intimate, special, memorable event that you will carry with you for your life. The students have the opportunity to thank people who were instrumental in their academic career. They thank their parents, their professors, their mentors. You kind of don't get that opportunity during regular commencement when they just call your name, you walk up, you shake the president's hand, you take a photo, and you're ushered off. Mm-hmm. That is the beauty of the specific cultural graduations. Would anyone else like to add to that?
Something I'd like to add, actually, I'm not graduating right now, and I won't be graduating anytime soon, but like Adrian mentioned, the centers are an academic center, and something that I notice working there is we see all of these people of color just, you know, going at it full blast, studying. We have study groups, we have office hours, and we're all studying and doing
our part.
Yeah. So I can already imagine my graduation with, you know, my community and how awesome it will be to see all of us. Like I said, a lot of us are misrepresented, and at home especially, you know, we have those people that say, you can't do it, you can't do it, and Sisa puede, like, we're all here doing it. Like, so for me, I just think it's really cool because, you know, we're in the centers, we're working hard at it, and to see everyone, for the community to graduate together, I think is a really beautiful thing.
I will add one other personal note. David Josiah Lawson was murdered here April 15th, and it not only rocked the campus community, but also the community at large. The hub for students after that senseless murder was the African American Center for Academic Excellence. It thrust that center and then subsequently all of the other centers into the forefront in the on campus and also the community at large. And I realized myself that I neglected supporting students of color after that. So one of the bitter blessings, but blessings just the same, is it forced me to engage more and be of better and more support to students. I haven't followed my charge as closely as I wanted to, but I vowed that I would be at the center at least once a week. And I implore faculty, staff, students, from any background to do the same. So we are almost out of time, but I would like for each of you to give a final plug where you can get information about your individual centers and how you can help and how you can support the students here on campus. So I'll start with you, Victoria.
Awesome. So we're located in Nelson Hall East 205 at Humboldt State University, second floor. I don't think it's necessarily helping. I think it's, you know, students and all of us coming to stand together and, you know, building that community that we need. We're empowering each other, and I think that's what's most important. So I'm going to pass it to you.
Yeah. So it's how do we stand in solidarity and stand in community where we see each other as there's a reciprocity. So the invitation is come stand with us. Visit. Be there. I mean, there are strengths and weaknesses that we have, and there's also strengths and weaknesses that others have. Let's meet each other and see where we help each other out. I like talking about my wife because her weaknesses are my strengths, and my strengths are her weaknesses. Let's see if we can't find that with folks in the community.
And Adrian?
I echo much of what they said, and we're located over at the Barrero House, which is behind the library circle. I say come to check out ITEP, come talk to us, see the rich knowledge and history there.
And mine's a little bit different because, again, we don't have a center, right? We're 1 hour a week. We do meet Mondays 2 to 3 at the MCC, so, you know, come join us at our space. But that is something you can do help, can help with, is you, even if you don't identify with the ADPI population, is advocate on creating an actual center for these students. You know, these students feel invisible on this campus. They've been treated like they're invisible on this campus. You know, advocating as much as you can to the administration that this is not going to go away and that this needs to be created a center, because there is not, 1 hour a week is not enough.
Absolutely.
For these students. We do have a welcoming event October 4th, 5 to 7 at the KBR. So, you know, it's the Mid-Autumn Moon Festival. We're going to have a lot of food. So please come to that. It's at KBR.
And also coming up in October is the Campus Dialogue on Race. And unfortunately, Carlos Sanchez, who is with us on the telephone, had to leave us. He had a prior engagement, but he did want to give information, and I appreciate that. But there is more information that you can find about the Campus Dialogue on Race, the Multicultural Center, and there are links to all of the cultural centers of academic excellence if you go to mcc.humboldt.edu. So we are out of time, but I would like to thank each of you for joining in this conversation. Thank you to Victoria, Fernando, Adrian, and Roger. Thank you to Carlos Sanchez, who was on the telephone with us. And also thank you to our Thursday Night Talk producer, Geraldine Goldberg, and our Thursday Night Talk engineer, Michael Roccaforte. And thank you to the listener for listening to this conversation to gain better understanding. And as I said at the top of the show, this is a place for in-depth discussions about race, culture, and identity. Through these conversations, we'll gain understanding and discover that our differences really aren't so different. Take the time to be nice to each other and say things with love. Thank you for tuning in.